We are learning Perek Lamed. We're on page 190. We're up to Pasuk Tet Zion, verse 16. We discussed last week, the beginning of this Perek, how David, even though he was somehow, some way, decides to join the Philistine army because he had befriended Achish. The Philistines did not want him to be part of this war, and therefore they sent him as well as David's men back home. Now, unfortunately, as we saw in the beginning of this parak, that as David and his men came back home, they noticed that their lovely home and the place of Siklag was a big ball of fire. It was burning up, and the reason is a group of people, which we are known to have not the nicest of relationships with, by the name of Amalek, they're the ones that, as we were just vulnerable, because the entire army had left, all the men, all those who had weapons, had left to fight a different war. So they looked at that as a great opportunity when the guard is down, as Amalek always does, when we're ayefiageya, when we're weak and weary, to attack us at that point. And what they did was they took not only a lot of money and possessions, but they also kidnapped. They kidnapped the children as well as the women. And obviously David wanted to do something about it, but before he would react hot-headedly and based on emotion, he asked the Urim Tumim. And he asked whether or not he should fight Amalek. In fact, the response was that he should. And instead of just jump, the problem was he didn't know where they were. He didn't know where they were hiding, where they went off to. Fortunately for them, they did encounter a person, as we saw in Pasuk Yud, Yudaf, Yudbet, an Egyptian slave. Actually, he was a slave, as they found out later, after giving him food, because he was starving, he hadn't eaten for a few days, drank anything for that matter. And after he regained his strength, he told them that in fact he was a servant of Amalek, and even though he did do all these terrible things to all these people, how can you hold a slave accountable, because they can only do what they're instructed to do as per their master's words. And therefore they obviously wouldn't kill him, but instead they wanted to use him as a tool to be able to find out where in fact Amalek was. So after David asked them to tell him where they were, his only concern was, are you going to kill me, or are you going to turn me in back to my master thereafter? And he made us swear to the fact that we would not do so if he would in fact tell us where they were hiding. So this is where we're up to again, Pasuk Tet Zayin. Pasuk Tet Zayin tells us, page 190, V'yoridehu v'hine netushim al p'nei kol aretz. So as he led them toward Amalek, they were netushim, as Mitzuta Sion translates as mufuzarim. The nation of Amalek were all spread out all over the land, which we know when it comes to one of the war tactics is divide and conquer. If a person is together, then you're strong in numbers. So the fact that they're all spread out shows their overconfidence. They were also not in a fortified city. They were just spread out on the field, which shows, again, that they were completely vulnerable themselves. They felt that they had nothing to worry about, because after all, everyone is in the middle of a huge war, the Philistines fighting the Jewish nation. And therefore, there's obviously no one to be concerned about. How did they know that David and his men would be sent back? And therefore, this is how they were, vulnerable to attack. And not only were they just spread out all over the field, but Ochlin v'shosim, they were busy eating, drinking, b'chogegim, b'chol hashalal ha-gadol, and they were having a holiday, a chag, but it's translated in the Mesudas Sion as rikida, that they were dancing around and having a great fun time because of all the great amount of booty that they had taken. Asher lochu mi'eretz plishtim mi'eretz Yehuda, which they took from these two places, from the Philistines as well as from Eretz Yehuda. While they were no longer there, there was no one to protect the city. That's when they took all these possessions. We look over here in the Masudas David, which may not be underlined, but nonetheless, when it says B'chol Shalal, Ratzalomer, that is to say, Simchatam Haya Ba'avur Kol HaShalal HaGadol Asher Lachu. Their joy came about because of all the possessions of all the things that they took. Okay, let's move on to the next Pasuk Yud Zayin. V'yakim David mehaneshev v'ad ha'erem v'macharasam. And David smote them, he and his army, from the Neshef until the evening the next day. Now the Neshef, the Mitzuta Sion, translates as Miha Erev, from the evening. It's translated over in the English as twilight. So that, again, the evening time. And actually, it's a dispute exactly what the word Neshef means, because if Neshef means evening, the Gemara in Brachot, which actually brought down the Radak over here, doesn't make much sense, because then it should have written from Erev to Erev. It should have used the same word. Or it should have said from Neshef to Neshef. Why does it switch from Neshef until Erev? So the Gemara tries to maybe conclude that really Neshef means from the morning. But if you look at the Radak, which again I may not have underlined, but nonetheless, the Radak of Pasuk Yud Zayin, where it begins, not the beginning of the Radak, but a few lines down, it says, L'das Rabbeinu Zechon HaRavracha, according to the opinion of our rabbis of blessed memory, their interpretation is Mehaneshev Yad Erev Omer Brachot. It says in the beginning of Masechet Brachos that Trei Nashvei Havi. When it says Neshef, it could actually mean two things, two opposites. They could have a completely different 180 degree difference. Neshev Yomama v'asi Laila, Neshev Laila v'asi Yoma. Neshev does not necessarily mean night or twilight. It means the change from day to night or night to day. So Neshev is interchangeable. Right. So here it's translated as Mesuda Sion, or over here as it was translated as twilight, even though in Mesuda Sion says it's Eret. But regardless, he was fighting for a long time against the Malik. Yeah.
So does it matter? Is it trying to tell us there is a 24-hour span, and it doesn't matter which 24 hours, or is it trying to tell us he fought for less hours?
Some actually interpret that they fought. If Neshef meant the morning,
yeah.
Since it says Erev l'macharasam, it doesn't mean that he just fought from morning until that night, but it means the following, which could be 36 hours.
So based on the Gemara, it's going to be two completely different time zones.
Right. It would either be a 24
hours, or right. It would be like a 12.
No. Like a 36. An additional 12.
A continuous battle, or maybe just an honor.
24 or 36. Was it a continuous battle?
That's what it implies by these words. It says he just continued to fight them from day until night, which the other interpretation of why this is unique is that when it came to wars before electricity, they used to stop in the middle at night. They would say, okay guys, it's time to stop. You know, they get paid time and a half. They don't want to have to pay their soldiers double time. So, but when it comes to a Malik, they never stop. You just keep fighting and fighting and fighting. So,
but the fact is that they were spread out. They could have fought the battles in different groups and not have to go all at once, as opposed to here. They were really...
it's much harder.
Very, you know, concentrated.
But it's much harder to fight when you spread out, to get your enemy when they're all spread out instead of the...
That's why it may have taken more time.
Right. If you see it as a ring, then this group and this group can then fight, they'll just get a breather, you know? That's why it's hard to really interpret what it means. Yeah. But I would wonder if Dominic can keep on going for 24 hours.
All the people. He fought the lion. He fought Goliath.
Yes.
He was a young guy then, but no, it's he probably was...
But he wasn't the lone man.
It will, yeah. Right. V'lo nimlad mehem ish ki'im arba meos ish nar asher rochvu al ha'gemolim v'yanusu. This is probably the most unusual part of this pasuk. We're going to learn a very interesting thing from here. It says that no one remained from among a malik except for arba meos ish, 400 young men, nar, asherach walgamolim, they're riding their animals, yanusu, they ran away. And what is the significance of this? So the English on page 191 brings down the words the Malbim, which is the more simplistic approach. The Malbim says, in the plain sense, again, I may not have underlined all this stuff, but in the plain sense, bottom left corner on 191, the verse itself indicates why these 400 were able to escape. They were youths. As well, they were agile and swift and were riding camels. So therefore, they had the ability to escape more or faster than others. We look at the Masudas.
Really? But what about the whole story about Esau and Yaakov? That's...
Oh, very good.
Funny, very right under there.
So let's look.
It's right above what you said.
So let's look at the Radak. The Radak talked...
That's English. 17, 191.
But he's telling you when
he's talking. All right, so the... Right, we're going to see that there's a significance between the 400 men of Yaakov in times of Esau, which of course Esau was a grandfather of Amalek, and the 400 people that that escaped. And it's brought down the significance of that number. It says it over here as well. The Mishpatzot Zahav brings down the following idea, which is very fascinating. We know the story in Vayishlach that Esav was chasing after Yaakov with 400 men. And fortunately, somehow his personality changed. Who knows exactly how to understand the Pesukim. He ends up coming, embracing, possibly kissing, maybe biting his brother, whatever that means. And they part ways. So Esav did not harm Yaakov, even though Yaakov thought for sure he was going to get killed, so much that he divided his arm. He did all these different things to protect. Now the question is, what happened to those 400 guys? What happened to those 400 people? So even though Esav didn't kill his brother Yaakov, but there were 400 other soldiers that were programmed and trained that Yaakov deserves to be killed. So why didn't they kill him? What happened to them? So it's brought down in the Bracious Rabbah the following. And I'm reading from the Mishpatzot Zahav, which is not in front of us. It says, Shehoyah zeh schar l'arba meos ish lehevi Esav. This is the reward. The fact that 400 people right now were able to escape, it was based on the merit of the 400 people that came in the time of Esav. Now what happened? Kishabal hilochim im Yaakov, when he, Esav, as well as the 400 men, went to attack Yaakov and destroy, wipe out his entire family, what ended up happening is menishvedu lehem echad echad v'holoch darko. They ended up changing their minds and deciding to go on their way. The 400 men never made it. That's the reason why when Yaakov, and some actually explain what happened, Esav just in a drop of a hat just changed. Esav would be more than happy to kill Yaakov. And the answer may be, maybe he felt like a big shot when he's with 400 guys. When he's all by himself, maybe not so much, exactly. So therefore, maybe that's the reason why Esav himself embraced Yaakov, because he realized he, on himself, cannot defeat him, which we see. Esav, Amalek, represents people who are cowards, people who hit below the belt, people who attack when no one's around, when you're weak and weary. So, but nonetheless, it's brought down that this was a tremendous schus, a tremendous merit. They left and did not attack Yaakov at that time. So Amosai Paro Lehem HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So it says, when did Hashem repay the descendants of Esav, which is Amalek, in this instance, when it says, Lonimon Mehem Ish, Ki'im Arba Meos Ish, because those 400 people fled, which was doing the right thing by not attacking Yaakov, in that merit Hashem said, I'm going to give you the opportunity to also run away. And that's the connection, that there's no coincidence that it's 400 and 400. And the Kli Yakar explains further that the language over here, it says that they were ishnar, which is
young men,
which he explains is she'arameos hanarim. Nitzelo b'schus ha'arameos ish. Esav. The reason why it says Ishnar. Why does it say they were Ishnar? Just call them a nar. Ish represents the Arba Meot Ish. It says also over there there was specifically 400 men, Ish. And therefore, that's the reason why we throw in that extra word over here, Ish, to hint to the fact that it was based on this plus. Exactly. So that's the idea that how we do not realize our actions, the things that we do, which we may not even see, the great things that we accomplish, and we don't necessarily see the benefit, the fruits of our labors. We may never see it. It may only have an effect on many, many generations later. But nonetheless, we are promised that, in fact, we are rewarded for that. So let's move on to the next pasuk. There's more to talk about. Let's move on. I would like to finish this parak. Pasuk Yudches. Vayatzel David es kol asher loch l'amalek. So David saved everything that Amalek took. He, after all, defeated them, so he was able to take everything that they took away from them. The Eshtei Nashiv Hitzel David. Also, the two wives did David save. And the Mepharshim explained that there is a reason why it's written in this particular order. Here also, the Kliyakar says that it's coming to tell us the selflessness of David. That David did not think about himself first. He always thought about all of his people. He thought about the nation first. And therefore, what was the first thing that's mentioned that he took? He took all the other stuff, which Amalek took. The very, very end, he thought about himself, which is a tremendous trait of a leader is supposed to... But, well, it does. He said, the wives. Keep my wife. That's all right. Take my wife, please. But that's... It doesn't necessarily even mean that, you know, he took a bunch of gold and said, all right, that's okay, you can still be in prison. But it shows that he was sensitive to things that belong to others just as much as the things that were connected in some capacity to himself.
No, but they called that when the men came back to the camp, they cried for their wives and children who were killed, right? And his were just kidnapped. So maybe he wanted to show them something in this order as well.
But the wives weren't killed.
No, but the other men, his men in the camp, their wives and children were killed.
They weren't killed. They were kidnapped. They were taken.
Who was kidnapped?
They were all kidnapped.
They were all kidnapped. They didn't kill them, though. They didn't kill anyone.
They weren't hurt. But the wives and the children were killed.
Well, there was a legitimate concern that almost definitely they probably will be killed. They ended up not being killed, right? But their concern was most definitely they will be killed, but fortunately they were not. But again, it shows the sensitivity. I would imagine, to answer this question, that David would not show sensitivity to others at the expense of his wives. I'm sure his wives did not feel that they were second best. I'm sure he treated them with the utmost of respect. But nonetheless, he, at the same time, wanted to show people that, you know, the reason why he did it was not just for his own selfish gain, but also for the benefit of others as well. Pasuk Yotes. V'lo nedar lahem min ha-katon v'yad ha-gadol. There was nothing that was left behind. Not something small. V'yad gadol, even the biggest things. Which obviously the big, more expensive things you'd want to keep, that's obvious. But even the katan, it starts off speaking about the small things. I found all these little things insignificant that maybe you wouldn't even care about. I gave that to you. And then afterwards, the gadol, the things which are even more precious to you. I gave that to you. The ad banim ubanos, your sons and daughters, which maybe is also alluding to this idea. If you want to go on the same idea of that, there's a reason why it's a pattern. That it's katan gadol, then banim ubanos. He gave a couple pennies and nickels. This was yours. Then he gave over the $100 bills, and he said, "Oh, by the way, and here's your children." Maybe to teach the message of when it comes to money, which a person may love. Maybe we can cloud our judgment as to the relationships and what we should prioritize as far as our families are concerned. David, when he gave cup and gadol, then banim. What? Right. But it's not only achron chavim, which is true, But maybe he was also trying to instill among his people that this is the order. This should be the proper acharon acharon chabad. This is the proper way. That a person should not lose sight of their family and their children in pursuit of gadol, of wealth. Mishalal v'ad kol asher lochu lahem, all the things that were taken from them, hakol heshiv David. David gave back every last thing. Vayikach David es kol hatzon habakar. David took animals, sheep, cattle. Nohagu ifnei hamikna hahu vayamru zeh shalal David. So as David took all these animals, they were led before them, these animals, this livestock, the Omer, and they would say a very interesting thing, quote, they would say three words, Zeh Shalal David, this is the booty, this is the money, the possessions of David. Well, the question is, what does it mean, Zeh Shalal David? These are the possessions of David. After all, it wasn't just his, it belonged to everyone, right? Because these things were, oh, exactly. So one answer is that when it comes to a melech, king wins, it's all his. If he decides thereafter to distribute it, that's fine. And even if you want to tell me that, what do you mean, this $100 bill or this watch, this was mine. Now remember, this was mine. What do you mean? The answer is that when someone steals it, and someone like a Moloch steals something, and you don't ever anticipate you're going to get it back, you're miyayish, you lose hope. As though you'll never, it's gone. It's as though it's been destroyed and it'll never come back to you. At that moment, halachically, once you lose hope in an object, it's not yours anymore, right? So therefore, the fact that a Molech, who's going to expect to get it back from a Molech? Fortunately, we did. So it's really HaKol, it really is Zeh Shalal David. This is all David's. And David deciding, we'll see, maybe he'll keep it all for himself. Maybe he'll distribute it only among the soldiers. Maybe not to the people that didn't fight, we'll have to say. But the starting point is Zeh Shalal David. Now the Radat gives us another interpretation. Exactly what is the reason why they have to keep saying these words, Zeh Shalal David? What's the point? So the Radat says, and this I believe is underlined, tells us an interesting thing that was done after a war. Now when you're fighting in a war and you're running, you could be pretty far away from home. And it may be very difficult for you to get back home, and you're not interested in going through all the twists and turns to be able to get there. You don't want to necessarily think that I wouldn't be allowed to cut through people's property. After all, I am the king, and I'm interested in getting back home with all my soldiers after a long war. So the Radak actually explains this, that that's allowed legally. The Radak says, V'diri Razal, our rabbi, Zechon of Racha, blessed memory, tell us that Hamelech parets lasso slo derech, the ein mamchen biyado, that when it comes to a king that wishes to go through a person's property, they're allowed to cut right through, and no one is allowed to protest. Tachsiv, as it's written, Nohag lifnei hamikne, ahu v'yomer zeh shalal David. Kolomer, what is the purpose of that pasuk? Says the Radak, Hayu nohagim hamikna lifnei hamachanem kamo shahaya darkan shahaya pogin abigidros at sados. They used to just walk straight in a straight line to get from point A to point B. They took a straight line there, and when they would get to various fields, which maybe they were fenced, lo hayu notin hamikna with sadecha. They wouldn't go all the way around and have to spend another few hours or maybe days to cut around so they wouldn't walk on the person's property. They would just cut right through. They cut right through your property. And you can say, what are you doing? You're stepping on my tomatoes and my cucumbers. You're ruining my garden. When the people that own these fields, they came and they would start protesting, Amru Avdi David, they would respond, you don't understand. Zeh Shalal David. This is the king's booty. Kolomer harishus biyado lirfo tzlo derech ki melechu. Because he is king, which is interesting, is he king? He's not king. Apparently,
this is what they're proclaiming.
Right. This, and doing it in a public way, by just plowing through private property, which only a king has the right to do that, but that was the statement that they were making of Zeh Shualda.
Maybe this is the source of the theory of eminent domain.
There you go. So, right. I mean, yes.
Where are all these Amaleki coming from? I thought all the Amaleki were killed except for the king.
Right. So, we begin last week discussing that when it mentions Amaleki, that's okay. that's all right. Last week we discussed that question. Okay. It's a good question, and there's a couple interpretations. When it says that Amalek was killed, everyone but Agag, the simple answer is, it may mean only his army. It doesn't mean necessarily the people scattered here, there, and whatnot. It's impossible to be able to find all of Amalek. They're all in one place. A more traditional approach may be that Amalek doesn't necessarily mean Amalek, a nation, but it means someone who represents someone who acts like Amalek, a terrorist, a coward, someone who acts as an Amalek. So that means you're labeled as Amalek, even though you may not have the DNA of Amalek.
You're Amalek-like.
Right, so that's a second possible approach. There may be other answers, but... Yeah. So, all right, let's move on.
Thank you.
Sure. Fine. Pasuk Chaf. So that's what they said. Ve'yavo David el Mosayim Hanoshim. So David and his nice little army with a lot of wealth joined up with the 200 people. Who are the other 200 men? Asher Pigrum, right, it says, Asher Pigrum Alecha Sachri David. They were, Pigru, as the Masudas Sion says, they were weak. They were scared. They were too scared to fight. So the 200 stayed and guarded the fort, which is, of course, the easier thing to do than to actually fight. So they joined the 200 people. The Yeshiva Benachal Habasor, which is the place. The Yetzu Likras David, they went out. These 200 people were so excited to see David alive. They went out to greet him. The Likras Ha'am, Asherito, as well as the soldiers that were with him. Yigash David as the Vayishol and Hemoshom. So maybe David would look at them and say, "Hey, you a bunch of wimps, you're a bunch of cowards, you didn't fight." And he gives them the cold shoulder. No. Vayishol and Hemoshom. He greets them. He makes them feel very comfortable and very fine. And the question is why? After all, they didn't fight. The answer is maybe if they did fight, it would have been worse off. Right? The reason why there's different... reasons that the Torah says that if you are weak at heart, among the reasons you should not fight, is not only for yourself, worse off, all the people around you. Right? You're going to end up putting everyone else in a compromising position. And therefore, the fact that they were willing to acknowledge that they were too weak to fight, that itself shows some level of inner strength, as opposed to marching onto the battlefield and causing us to lose a war. Beyond Kolish Rav Uvlial Mihanoshim Asher Holchu Im David. Now David had some good soldiers, but they were raw. They were pretty mean spirited in the fact that they were not so happy that they put their lives on the line. They were willing to march into the battlefield. You think I wasn't scared? I was scared too, but I risked my life. Because that's what I was supposed to do. That's what the Rebbe told me to do. That's what David told me to do. So I did it. And I'm very angry at you 200 people. That you just were cowards. You decided not to fight. Asher Holchuim David. Those people were David. They were pretty upset. The Yomru, and they said, Yan Asher Lo Holchuimi. Lo Nitin Lehem Mehashol Asher Hitzalim. Those people that didn't fight, we're not going to give them a penny. We're not going to give them any of the things that we were able to take. Ki'im ishes ishto des banav v'inhagu v'yeleich. I understand. Obviously, the wife, your children, that obviously, you know, you'll go back to your family. You'll go back to your cowardly husband. No problem. But we're not giving you a penny because you don't deserve a penny. What do you deserve? Look at Masudas David over here, the first line of Masudas David, L'chol ish, es ish to'ovano. He said that every man will be able to reunite with his family. Not only should they not enjoy all the extra wealth that we have, we don't even want them to get the money that they originally had, the money that was taken from them. And again, halakhically, it's not theirs anymore. And it shows they would never in a million years have fought because they had the opportunity to do so and they just cowered and chickened out. So they were never going to get that money back anyway, the money that was stolen. So now that it's in my hands, I'm not giving it to you. You don't deserve it. I deserve it. I fought. I won. I deserve it. Only me. We'll divide it among ourselves. Now, apparently at this point, David was willing to disperse the money among those people, because otherwise what right would they have to speak up when David really has the rights to everything? So let's say that they actually knew that they were entitled to something. But David was not happy with their attitude, that they were a blial. But Yomer David, says Pasuk Chav Gimel, Lo tasu kein echoy. Do not do such a thing, my brothers. That which Hashem gave to us, the Yishmor Asani protected us, the Itines Hagdud Abba Aleinu B'Yadenu, He placed them in our hands. He placed them in our hands. And we look at the Mesudas David over here. He's saying, what? You're such brave warriors. You're the one that, because of your strength, caused everyone to win. Look at Pasuk Chav Gimel, Mesudas David. He says, Es Asher Nasan Ratzalemer V'chi B'Koach Yadenu L'Kachnu, was because of your strength, because of your bulging biceps. Halohu Es Asher Nasan Hashem Lanu, it's because Hashem was with us. V'Shemar Asan, He protected us. K'lonifgan M'min Ish, that we were able to be victorious and not a single person stayed on the battlefield alive, except for those who ran away. V'u Master Es Agudat B'Yadenu, He put those soldiers, those troops of Amalek, into our hands. So what, you're going to say, I deserve this money? You don't deserve the money any more than anyone else. Because the fact that you won this war, it wasn't you. And that's how the Mefarshim explained that they were not only called over here in the previous Pasuk, Ra, Ishra, but also Blial. A Blial means someone who Bli does not have an Al or Ol, the yoke. Al Malchus Shemayim, exactly. Which the fact that they said this showed a lack of one of the fundamental beliefs that Hashem is the one that is really in charge. And when you march on the battlefield, the reason why we win or we lose, comparable as we've seen before in the previous stories of Amalek, with Moshe raising his hands to the Shemayim, that's how we win. His hands are down, we lose. We have to lift up his hands as they're getting weak. Because we look at his hands, we realize that God is actually the one that's in charge. God is the one that's causing us to be victorious over Amalek. Once we think it's physical against physical, us against them only, then we don't stand a chance. It's only when we have Hashem that causes us to be victorious. And one of the Haftorahs, which begins Hashem Uzi, which we know that a very famous gun, which is called the Uzi, is named after owner, the person's name who created this gun. Uzi means it's my strength. This gun, it's my strength. Hashem Uzi. He forgot the first word of the Haftorah. Hashem Uzi. And so too over here, why should we not give them the money? They deserve it just as much as we do, and we'll see why do they deserve it. They didn't do anything. We'll see they did do something. Okay. Fine. Pasuk Chav Dalet. Umi yishma lachem l'davar hazeh. Who should listen to you about this matter? No one should listen to the words that are coming out of your mouth. It's so terrible. Rather, ki kachele kayored m'mochama, the portion that was given for going out to the war, kachel kayoshev al kelim yachtav yachaloku. So too will be given the exact same portion those who are yoshev al hakelim, who are sitting by the vessels, the equipment, which means they were guarding the camp. It's not like they were doing nothing, because look what happened the last time when we left a camp or city unprotected, got burned to the ground. So the fact that they were there happens to be no one invaded that area, but they were doing something. They were accomplishing something. They were protecting our space. They were protecting our camp. And therefore, they deserve the same things that we get. As soon as David says over here in Pasuk Chav Dalet, Ratzalomar, that is to say, the first Sudas David, the Af im necessab oitzim yadenu. Even if you want to tell me that the reason why you were victorious is not because of God, it wasn't Hashem Uzi, it was you, and that's the reason why we won against the Moloch. We call Malkum, nonetheless, practically, miyishma lechem l'davar hazeh. Don't listen to what you're saying. Ki halo al kol panim. Nonetheless, yashlishmar kim. They did something productive for us. They watched our camp. Im kain, if that's so, meharoi luchalukim ahem shabbat shabbat. It's befitting that they should get equal amount. Ki kain hu hamina hanohog mi'oz. That was the proper way of dealing with things. So it's interesting, the way that David answers is not on his own terms. He brings himself down to their level. He says, I understand you are not on the level of understanding because you're Belial. So for me to start preaching spirituality, I'm not there, so it means nothing. You know, so what? I don't believe you. I don't believe it. It's not part of my belief system. So he answered on their level to say, listen, even if you are the ones that won the war without God, you still have to give them something. They still deserve because they did something productively for us. They did act productively for us. Okay, let's move on. Pasuk Chaf Hey. Came from that day on, ad hayom hazeh, and it became the words of David as a chok and a mishpat for Israel until this day. So, what is chok? Chok, Mitzvah Sion translates as davar kavua, something which is set, permanent, an eternal decree, something which is forever. A chok also can mean something which we don't understand. So therefore, according to... And so what is it? Was it a chok or was it a mishpat? A mishpat we do understand. A chok we don't understand. So maybe, I'm just thinking, that a chok might be for them. For them it makes no sense. But the truth is it's a mishpat. It does make sense. The madre, the level, you're on a lower level. So to you it's a chok, because I'm the one that won the war, not them. The truth is, it's a mishpat. But regardless, that is the ruling that David provided, that made, that we have to give to them. Now, interestingly enough, as this parak ends, we'll see basically all these next psukim are places. V'yavo David el Siklag. So David went to place. V'yishalach mihashalol uzikni Yehudah l'ri'ehu le'imor. And he provided also with a lot of wealth and booty, that which were given to the Zikni Yehuda, the elders of Yehuda, say, Hini lechem bracha, should be a blessing unto you, Mishlal ove Hashem. All these possessions, these booties which belonged to the enemy. La'asher beveis el, la'asher beramos negev, la'asher beyatir. Not going to translate this. These are all different places that David traveled to and gave them the spoils. La'asher be'aror er, la'asher b'sifmon, v'l'asher b'eshtmoa, v'l'asher b'rachol, v'l'asher b'arei ha'yachmeili, v'l'asher b'arei ha'keni, v'l'asher b'charma, v'l'asher b'vorashim, v'l'asher b'atan, v'l'asher b'chevron, v'l'chol ha'makom ha'asher his'halich sham David hu'v'anashav. We look at the very last words of this parak. All of those places that we mentioned were all the places that David and his men went to, and he gave every single person there some type of money, some of the spoils. Why? The Radak tells us something beautiful, which is also in the English on page 193. The Radak says over here, which is how we'll conclude, Shehaya mishalich b'nehem m'makom m'makom. David was always on the run, and David was very lucky to have a lot of people that cared for him in different cities. Now, David wasn't very wealthy. After all, he was running all over the place. How was he able to accumulate any wealth? So, a lot of people did him a lot of favors throughout his life. and maybe they would get repaid, maybe they wouldn't. Shahi Barach, when he was running away, they did tremendous good things. They hid him away from Shaul. They didn't agree with the king chasing after him. What's David? David never did anything wrong. So also Gamkein Hu Tova Mihashalal. Therefore, David also decides to pay them back, even though they had no connection whatsoever to any of these spoils. Nonetheless, he repaid him, and it's said very well over here in the English that David set an example of unselfishness and gratitude. The Hakaras HaTov that he shows, that even many years later, which no one even could think, so I did him a favor, but you know, he's never going to repay me. The reality is, in David's mind, when someone did him a favor, it was always, at one point, whenever I can somehow get something, I'm going to immediately give it back. And therefore, it shows the tremendous proper attitude, unlike the negative attitude, which we discussed many times, of what have you done for me lately. David's attitude was, what did you ever do for me? And therefore, if you ever did for me any type of tova, I will try my very best at some point in my life to eventually repay you, as we see he does. Which concludes the parak. Next week we have parak Lamed Aleph, which happens to be the last parak in Shmuel Aleph, which is only 13 psukim, so you never know.